The Summit County Council meeting at the county courthouse tomorrow, starting with a closed session to discuss property acquisition, then opening the meeting at about 3:15 in the studio with a preview of that. I have County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So I think the closed session may be dealing with the Florence Gilmore parcel. Can you tell us what's happening with that?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, since the council signed the purchase agreement early last year, we have been meeting regularly with the EPA, with other federal and state resource partners that are interested in the restoration eventually of the Lower Silver Creek Reach. And we're getting pretty close. And I know I keep saying that. And pretty close seems to be a geological measure in regards to negotiating with the EPA. But we're getting down to the point where both the Administrative Control Board for Snyderville Basin Rec and the council are going to be making some final decisions. And, you know, we can't talk about our negotiations at this point, but it's coming down to crunch time.
Yeah. And at one point, I think the APA was closed due to the government shutdown. So that
That did slow us down a little bit at the beginning of the year. We'd probably be advanced by a couple of months if we weren't, if we didn't experience that. But, you know, we've gone through these hard negotiations, and we think we've gotten as good a deal as we're going to get out of this. So it's time to make a decision.
So we're talking about 460 acres. This is adjacent to the triangle parcel, as we have called it there.
Well, it's kind of adjacent to the triangle parcel. It's kind of wedged between the Justice Center and the UDOT roadshed, and then extends out into the meadow towards the rail trail. And so about 360 acres of that, or a little less, would be strictly recreational open space under a conservation easement. Our concept is that we'd reserve a portion of it that is actually clean and doesn't have contamination on it for possible development in the future. And that could range from, you know, we've got some adjacent private property owners that are looking to develop, and there might be some opportunities there, but mostly more looking at civic or community uses around government operations.
Yeah, so about 100 acres, then you're saying, plus whatever.
100 to 120, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Still, I mean, why are we talking about spending more than $10 million on a site full of contaminated soil?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds kind of crazy, but you know, the overall concept is that, you know, eventually these properties could be cleaned up, we're actually trying to facilitate that process a little quicker than it would normally happen, and then it is the desire of the council to not allow it to be developed in the future and control that development. So you know, if we step in with this concept, we can achieve a lot of different goals for the community, as well as, you know, making sure that in the future that is cleaned up and restored to some restored in a way that has recreation value.
So who's responsible, though, for cleaning that up? I mean, we just saw the EPA last week, you know, filing suit against United Park.
Yeah, interesting that the two stories were in the newspaper at the same time. But the responsible parties are still the responsible parties for cleanup. You know, whether they will end up having the solvency to do so is the question. But you know, at the end of the day, the EPA remains responsible for cleaning those up. We would not be even entertaining a purchase of this type of property if we weren't absolved of that responsibility. So that's the concept behind that.
All right. As we noted, the money is coming from recreation bond money. The area we're talking about, I mean, essentially flat. I mean, what kind of recreation are we talking about? Like some kind of motorcycle track? I mean, it's really not prime mountain bike.
You'd think it's flat, but it has very similar terrain qualities to Round Valley when you really get out onto it and hike it or around on it. It does have some variation to it. It has a stream running through the middle of it in the bottom part of the watershed. And so it has qualities that, that other areas won't have. And, you know, it will connect to Round Valley because we have connections already under the highway in order to make that happen. So it's just going to open up a different set of terrain with different features.
Okay. And it's not the wildlife connection. It's a separate.
Well, I mean, the wildlife connection also is a connection for, I mean, it allows connections for non-motorized vehicles or just walking. But there's other connections also. If you look up into the north area under I-80, there's a connection between Silver Creek and Silver Creek Village area. That's also an underpass under the highway.
All right. Getting back to the agenda, the council getting a final legislative update. I guess we've talked to Jana Young about many of the issues, but I guess what would you think the county's proudest accomplishments would be out of this session?
Oh, I mean, you know, the partnership between Park City, Salt Lake City, the county, Rocky Mountain Power, and our legislature in advancing what seems like a very radical concept in Utah of allowing renewable energy, allowing communities to choose renewable energy for their power sources. I think that's going to end up being the long-term proudest moment. But, you know, for me, it's all about our involvement. When I came to the county, our county council was really wanting to be more involved with legislative activity. We've put the pieces in place as well as the effort in place in order to be there. And we've had some effect. I mean, we're more involved with UAC or the Utah Association of Counties and having influence within that body. We're certainly able to work with a lot of different communities and the legislature to advance some of our own priorities. And that was not the case a few years ago. And so, you know, so proud of our council, so proud of our staff and those that we work with and our partners in the community in working together to advance our efforts.
Yeah. So you think we were pretty effective then, working through council members, our lobbyists, the UAC?
Yeah, I think we have been. And, you know, time will tell. I mean, we will have more priorities in the future to advance, and we'll see how that goes. I mean, it's a constantly changing environment. Whether it's the mix of county councilmen and commissioners in the Utah Association of Counties or the legislature itself, we've had very good relationships with our local legislators in the past few years. So it's come together very well, and it's been good for Summit County.
Okay, let's see. On one topic, the county wasn't able to stop the amusement park control bill. So how do we move forward with this?
Well, you know, I don't know that I've gotten briefed on that one specifically about the effects on Summit County. I'll have to get with Jana on that one. But, you know, this is the time of year where we start to look at what the impact is. And so we've slowed down for a second to celebrate some success, but we know there's other things that are going to affect us. Sometimes in a positive way, sometimes in a negative way, that we need to really nug through and understand how does that affect Summit County and the residents or businesses within Summit County.
Okay, at about 3:50, a discussion with regard to the 2019 restaurant tax update. Anything new here, or is it just a...
Well, really just process. We're trying to get a lot more contact with possible bidders or applicants before they make those applications, get a lot more exposure between the committee and the council so that they make agreement on what it is the priorities are for the year. The restaurant tax, you know, their top two criteria within their process have to do with, you know, increasing tourism and increasing the base of restaurant tax so that it grows. You know, happy to say that we're projected to be giving out over $2.7 million in grants for this year, which is an amazing number. We're just trying to get out in front of it a lot more so that a lot more people understand. And hopefully we get more interesting projects in for for applications.
Yeah. The application process just seems so laborious. I mean, is it all really necessary?
It is. I mean, if you think about it, we're granting over $2.7 million. Last year, we had over $4.6 million in applications. So, you know, the committee needs to really discern between these and make sure that they have the information in order to make those decisions. It's being spread widely, but you know the restaurant tax has a specific purpose. So we want to honor that.
At 4:05, a discussion regarding the temporary zoning ordinance on shared mobility devices. We're talking about e-scooters here, I believe. The TZO that was set up expires this month, April 19th.
Yeah, it does. And we're back in front of the council. We kind of waited for the legislative process to happen because the state legislature decided to put some parameters around what local governments could regulate in regards to e-scooters and shared scooters in that regard. We're really looking at the gamut, whether there's franchise agreements, business licenses and what those include. There's some what I would call kind of vague language within the legislation about what kind of fees you can charge in regards to these, which also has an effect on how we want to regulate, because we don't want to be spending a lot of general fund tax money in order to police a business. So I think there's going to be a lot of discussion on this one. I'm not sure that we're going to come to a decision necessarily tomorrow on this one, because it's a little complicated. Plus, we haven't seen the pressure yet. It could come. But we haven't gotten any indications that it's coming at this point.
The staff report noted that a community survey was taken.
Yes.
Respondents found that it could have some transit benefits.
Well, I mean, if you read the literature, and I imagine a lot of our citizens are, I mean, it really does have the potential in areas where it's been implemented to provide some of that last mile kind of connections between residences and transit services or other types of transportation. But it has its downsides too. I mean, we're just read a major article, or maybe it was NPR that did something this weekend about injuries related to e-scooters and e-bikes, because there's not safety equipment involved, and you know, quite often people take chances that they wouldn't take with their personal vehicles, personal bikes or scooters. So, you know, it's a trade-off. And then there's also the transportation system itself. Can our trails handle this much more traffic, or this kind of traffic? Can our sidewalks handle them? And these are all things that cities and counties are dealing with all over the country.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a huge paradigm shift, because we've built our roads for cars.
Certain things, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So need to get back.
And, you know, Salt Lake City is dealing with it from a speed perspective, and neighborhoods are dealing with it. Do they want them on sidewalks or not? So it's another one of those disruptive technologies that we're trying to mix in.
So what is it that you're looking for from council tomorrow?
I think some good discussion about the possibility of these coming into the community, how we want to deal with that, mixing in the results of the survey, which, you know, the survey also said that although our citizens understand that there might be a benefit, they may not be in favor of it yet, given our current infrastructure. So all of those things have to be taken into consideration.
All right. Let's see. IHC asking for a property tax exemption. This is the parcel for the Peace House there at Quinn's Junction. Basically, what agencies have to ask for this exemption? They're not just...
They do. I mean, it's kind of similar to the property tax exemption for primary homes. I mean, you're assumed in Summit County to be a second home unless you apply for a primary residence designation. And that's similar with nonprofits. They're required to keep up their due diligence, keep up their tax reporting, all of those types of things in order to maintain nonprofit status. And then the result is that they can apply for that property tax exemption.
Now, why would somebody get turned down?
Well, I mean, there's different things. I mean, if they don't file their proper reports on time, if they for some other reason lose nonprofit status, we have to make a determination at that point.
All right. Finally, I wanted to ask you about the eminent domain at Pine Meadow Ranch. This is actually a friendly condemnation.
It is. I mean, usually when we hear eminent domain or condemnation, we cringe because it usually means an adversarial situation. In this case, this concept was really the only option for kind of the Tollgate area. Who is putting forth a property that they'd like to offer to the North Summit Fire District for a station. And because of the restrictions on their HOA rules, they really can't get the votes together to actually offer the property in the normal way. So they'd like to take it this way. It really doesn't from a cost perspective or any other way, it doesn't really matter that we go this way if it's a friendly condemnation. It just is a different process because it goes through a court process at that point.
Yeah, I guess I'm just, why can't they get votes from the
Well, homeowners? It's very difficult in some areas where it's highly where second homes are the predominant method, that, you know, you can't always get people to either show up or send in proxies for those votes, and they're very stringent on the percentages that they have to achieve in order to exchange property.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I don't have anything else today, Leslie.
All right. Tom, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:29. Good morning. Well, the Park City Museum is hosting a lecture tomorrow night and opening a new exhibit this weekend. In the studio with details, I have the director of the museum, Sandra Morrison. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So tell us first about the lecture.
So tomorrow night, 5 o'clock, at our new building, the Education and Collections Center, which is in Prospector, 2079 Sidewinder Drive, with lots of parking, so you can either park. It's shared communal parking in Prospector. So if Lot C fills up, park across the street in Lot J, and of course you can ride the bus. We have Bob Beek, and he's a senior scientist with the USGS out of Salt Lake. And in 2014, they discovered a huge landslide 20 million years ago that was actually the biggest one known in the world. And then shortly after that, discovered one that happened 35 million years ago, and it's called the Silver Creek Chaos. So he's going to talk about how that landslide and the collapse of the volcanoes in the Park City area basically led to the formation of Park City as a silver mining district.
Okay, so now I understand the history about it. It was like landslides? Are we talking about Thistle?
No, we're talking about way bigger than Thistle.
Yeah.
So, and what's interesting is, you know, this is all recent discoveries. I mean, 2014 isn't that long ago. And in fact, there was an international symposium in 2017 talking about, you know, this geologic occurrence. And interestingly enough, that one of them is our own backyard, and actually it's the, as Bob put it, the ultimate source of the silver deposits in our mining district.
Okay. So, again, everyone's welcome. Do you
yes.
need to RSVP or just show up?
No, come early, though. We've been getting about 90 people show up, and that fills us up. So come early to get a seat. And, you know, Bob should be really interesting. He actually spent 4 years in North Dakota working for the USGS, so, you know, this is mild weather for him, I guess.
Okay, and then you've got a new exhibit. Tell me about
yes,
that.
Yes, so we're actually installing today, and it's called Coney Island, Visions of an American Dreamland, and this is an exhibition that's coming from the National Endowment for the Humanities. They actually worked with the Wadsworth Athenaeum in Hartford, Connecticut, to put this exhibition together. And it's 150 years of Coney Island, basically talking about, you know, how it started off as sort of a watering hole local attraction at the mouth of New York Harbor and transformed itself into an amusement mecca you know, that everybody in the world's heard about. And then, you know, and the history until today with its struggle for renewal. And I thought it was an interesting, you know, theme for an exhibition, because it kind of compares to our skiing industry. And, you know, we started off as just a little local with snow park just open on the weekends and kids learning how to ski, and then the opening of Park City Mountain and that transformation, especially with the Olympics, into, you know, now we're this, you know, international destination resort as well. And so what does our future hold? And are there lessons, you know, from Coney Island that, you know, we could learn here? So,
okay. Yeah. Be on exhibit till when?
Yeah, so on exhibit until May 25th.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, any local days planned?
Yes. And so the next local day will be on the 16th, Tuesday, April 16th. And we're open shorter hours now with the resorts closed. So open from 11 in the morning until 6 at night. And then Sunday is always noon to 6, but still 7 days a week. So come on by. And of course, the exhibit opens this Saturday, the 6th of April.
Okay. Yeah. So what kind of season did you have?
Great. Yeah. Busy.
Okay, yeah. I was going to wonder, because it was like last year, I mean, I know you were really busy. Part of that had to do, I think, with, you know, just we had sunny days and not a lot of snow. And this year,
So I was looking, February was about the same. We were up 1% from last year. March, we were up 5%, which is amazing, because as you said, last year, you know, we were up considerably more than that. So then to then see another increase on top of that is just amazing. This town is busy. Yeah, so, yeah, so we're ready to have a slow season.
Okay, yeah. But you never close, do you?
No, we never close. Yeah, Thanksgiving and Christmas Day are our 2 days that
and
we're closed.
And Sundance.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Anything else you want
to? So a couple of other things. Also on the 16th. So we installed a solar system down at our new building, the Education and Collections Centre. So that evening at 6 o'clock, we have the mayor, Andy Bierman, coming to say a few words, and Rocky Mountain Power, and we're going to celebrate the installation. So if you'd like to join us for that, just contact me. You can either call the museum or go online, parkcityhistory.org, because we are taking RSVPs for that. And yeah, and we'd love people to come to that too.
Okay. And again, the lecture tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, it starts at 5 promptly, so get there early. People start showing up about 4:30, so
okay.
We'll see everyone tomorrow night. Should be really interesting.
All right, Sandra, thank you.
Thank you.
Sandra Morrison is the director of the Park City Museum. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:36 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, coming up this Friday night, two films being shown at the Park City Eccles Center. In the studio to tell us a little bit more about that from the Park City Institute, I have Mo Hickey along with Whitney Thompson from the National Ability Center and Christy Johnson. Good morning to all of you.
Morning.
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 Okay, so this is being put on by National Ability Center?
It's actually a partnership with the Park City Institute. They are providing the venue, and we're kind of supporting to get the whole adaptive community out and excited about these films.
Okay, so who wants to talk about the films? We've got... it's happening 7 to 9 p.m. on Friday. Return to Paradise, A Skier's Journey, and then Sound of Silence, Born Severely Deaf.
Yeah.
Christy?
So actually, in speaking with Whitney from the NAC, we were approached by Mike Vowles, who his story is, like, incredibly inspirational. 28 years ago, he was a top mogul skier, and he suffered a debilitating accident and kind of stepped away from skiing entirely. This film chronicles his return to skiing, and it's like an amazingly inspirational story. But in talking with Whitney, we discovered there's this opportunity with Robin, who is kind of your new school freestyle skier, amazing athlete. This film is filmed... You can't even believe this stuff. I mean, the footage that they captured, and his story is incredible as well. He was bullied, misunderstood, but skiing actually brought him meaning in his life. And so two of them, very inspirational. The common theme is there, but it's like old school, new school. So it's kind of cool.
Okay. Robin actually born deaf. So,
yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he is a freestyle skier for Scott Sports, so he's competing alongside able-bodied athletes, and throughout his journey, he kind of has found that his deafness is not really a disability, but it's something that gives him a different way of looking at freestyle skiing.
I was going to say, a lot of focus, right? No distraction.
Absolutely.
Some of the footage is actually amazing. When we saw the first clip of it, it was like, people have to see this. It really is amazing.
Okay, so who did the films? I mean, they're just independently produced.
Mike produced his own, I believe, and he had reached out to us. He was living in Seattle, moving to Sun Valley, and he wanted to work with nonprofits, and he had done work with NAC. Mm-hmm. Some of the footage is here at Park City with the NAC. And he just reached out and said, I want to get this story out there, and I want to partner with nonprofits to get it out. So he's done this in Seattle, Tahoe, Sun Valley, and now Park City. And then Whitney brought Robin into the picture, which was a great addition. They're both going to be doing, Robin's going to be doing some great student outreach on Thursday, and I believe it's the first time he's doing student outreach.
Yeah, he did get out with our Team Flyers, which is kind of our Special Olympics freestyle and race team. So he got out there last weekend and showed him some of his moves.
But the cool thing about the student outreach film that Robin's going to be talking and interacting with the students premiering is that it's a film that's not going to be released to the public. So no one's going to see that particular film. It's behind the scenes creation of the film that's going to be showing on Friday. So it's a very special event for high school kids.
Okay. And we've got tickets, $10?
Tickets are $10 for adults, $5 for students, as always. And we're going to be partnering. We have a number of foundations that are going to be in the lobby that night, the Sam Jackenthal Foundation, the NAC, YSA, Kids Play International, so they can showcase the work they're doing. And the whole idea is to make it a community event. It's Hall of Fame weekend. It's Ski History Week. So we figured everything tying in together. It's a nice way to end the season and be on an inspirational note.
So do you purchase the tickets online prior to, or just
you can purchase the tickets online at parkcityinstitute.org, or you can buy them at the box office the day of show.
All right. And then both Mike Vowles and Robin, is it Gillen?
Yes, Gillen. Yeah.
They'll be on stage then after the films?
Intermission. They're going to stand up and kind of interact with the audience and kind of tell their story. I mean, I can tell you that talking to Mike, he is one of the most inspirational guys. Like, he has so much energy and, like, an amazing spirit. So I think that will be the best part of the entire evening by far.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to mention? All right.
Nope. Thanks for having us.
All right. Thanks for coming in again. Triumph of Spirit, Two Driven Athletes, Two Moving Films this Friday night at the Park City Eccles Center. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, the project for A Deeper Understanding is doing something a bit different this quarter. They'll be hosting a discussion on how the paradigm of gender has evolved into something a little bit more complex. Those who will be leading the discussion are local teens, some of them members of Planned Parenthood's Teen Council. In the studio with details, I have the founder of the project, Pastor Charles Robinson. Annabelle Scheinberg is the education director for Planned Parenthood of Utah. And I have one of the panelists, Morgan Pickney. Good morning to all of you.
Morning.
Morning.
So, Charles, let's start with you. I mean, how did this all come about? Did you need to be convinced to kind of turn it over to the younger generation here?
Well, we were having our planning meeting in January to decide what were the topics we wanted to take on in the first half of this year. And someone, I don't remember who it was, noted the fact that in all these many years, we have never done anything targeting young people. So the question put forth in the room was, well, what would happen if we had an evening dedicated to young people and we let the young people plan it and kind of lead it? And so that's what happened. Got some young people together, and this is the topic they came up with. And I'm really looking forward to the conversation.
Okay. Now, are you going to be participating in it? I mean, you sometimes serve as moderator, but...
No, I'm just going to be, you know, doing the mop and broom stuff. Just the practical kinds of stuff.
All right, but it's very similar to the format that we know it. Thursday night, 7 to 9 p.m., the first hour discussion, the second hour discussion amongst the audience and Q&A.
There'll be some Q&A. There'll be an opportunity, I think, for some small group work. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to have, and I'll let Annabelle tell you about all the different groups that are coming to set up information tables, but we're hoping that this will be not only an exchange of ideas among young people, but that it'll also be an educational event for parents. And so we've got a number of agencies that do a lot of work with young people, especially around gender issues, that will set up information tables in the back of the room. And when the event is over, parents will be free to approach those tables to get additional information.
Okay. So, Annabelle, can you talk a little bit about who's on the panel? I had mentioned that Morgan is one of those.
Absolutely. So the panel will be two current Park City High School students. One is a member of Teen Council, and one is a GSA board member. That's Gay Straight Alliance. And then we have two who are recently graduated. One's in college and one's working. Those two, one of them went to Park City High School as well, and the other one attended school in Salt Lake City but was part of Teen Council. So kind of a little mixture of experience and
Okay, and then the moderator is going to be Morgan Zarnetsky. Who's that?
Megan Zarnetsky.
Oh, Megan.
Megan teaches social justice and does a lot of work with equity and education and is located at Treasure Mountain Junior High. And some of you may remember Megan facilitated a panel about the film Bias, which was part of the Park City film series earlier this year, and just did a fantastic job and has really worked well with both Teen Council and I think lots of students in the community and expanding their ability to express themselves and be who they are.
Okay. So, Morgan, what's your take then on the issue of gender? I mean, when Charles is talking about a youth issue, I don't see gender being a youth issue. I mean, I guess gender is gender, but, you know, what's your take?
I think that this is just a really good opportunity for students to be able to have like a safe space to communicate with people and sort of share experiences. And it's a really great opportunity also for parents and community members if they don't know a whole lot about gender and all the new terms to sort of learn and be able to understand more what kids are going through, I guess, these days. Well, all people, but it's sort of more predominant now than it was like 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think what we've really learned, at least in the English language, is that there is no non-gender. I guess all of the romance languages, there just is no
gender neutral.
Yeah,
right there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I noticed on your signature, Annabelle, that you print that, you know, saying it's he or she, hers, or
yeah.
I mean, is that where we're headed to in this?
I'm glad you mentioned pronouns. Pronouns are a really important piece of gender identity for some young people and people. And so we want to open up space for folks to let us know what their pronouns are. And so, for example, we may have non-binary youth. We do have some non-binary youth on the panel who choose they, them pronouns. Mm-hmm. And there are far more pronouns that I can get into here. However, we will have a little interactive activity about pronouns, kind of an educational piece led by our Safe at Schools trainer, Bo Owens. And I think that will be helpful to everybody to kind of set the stage for a conversation. So we'll introduce the concept of pronouns and then we'll reinforce it at the end.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, what is going to be your contribution, do you think?
I'm the vice president of the GSA, so sort of that representation and offer and sort of being there to like maybe educate on some things that people might not know about, being able to have like the explanation for that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty lively group, yeah? I mean, you've got good membership and pretty active?
Yeah, on paper, we have, I think, about 150 students signed up for the club, and we have socials and different projects that we work on, and we are doing something for the Day of Silence and Trans Day of Visibility next week at one of our meetings, so sort of just informing about different events in the LGBT community and just making it an inclusive space is sort of what we're all about.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot different than I guess you and I reading Betty Friedan, right?
Yeah.
The times, they are changing.
It's true. And the way millennials see gender is really, there's been research on it. It's absolutely different than folks our age. And so it's really, I think, a great opportunity to listen and learn and also get some questions answered. So I know that Morgan and I were talking and he's hoping that educators come, right? That teachers come from the community to learn more about how to support their students. And when I first talked to to Charles about this, one of the things Charles said is that, you know, this is a way for us to learn how to show respect, right, for people, because we haven't been taught what these different ways of expressing gender are about and how we can support folks in being who they are.
Okay. Anything else anyone has to say?
I do want to mention our resource tables.
Oh,
so we
sure.
will be having a table with the Mama Dragons, who are parents who support their LGBTQ plus youth. We will be having ACLU of Utah. We will have Equality Utah, also Connect, also Valley Mental Health. So we really do hope that it does serve as a support and opportunity for folks who are looking to learn more and to know how to support their family members.
So those would that would kind of take place after the conversation? Is that the thinking, that there were just some tables with some information set up? And
yeah, and also hopefully some of the representatives of the organizations can come up and speak in the dialogue, just like the other audience members, and share some of their lived experience around being a parent of a transgender youth or what have you, how their organization can support people.
Okay. Annabelle, Morgan, Charles, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.